Why not?
Coming up next, last month this fellow regaled us with some excellent metal songs, despite his opinion of them. This month, no songs, unfortunately. Andrew Bentley. Thank you guys.
Yeah, no singing this time.
Boo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Tell me about the family opera.
Did he have the right idea?
I can never come back. He's driven me away forever. All right. Guilty pleasures are the currency of our age. I'm no stranger to the concept. My last two Nerdlog performances were birthed by a teenage love of power metal. And that's a relatively benign example compared to the glee with which I collect and enjoy concept art, Europop, and the expository plot segments of hardcore pornography. And generally, I feel I've evolved past the awkward self-conscious guilt I harbored in college about my hobbies. And if I insisted on clearing my own paper jam at FedEx rather than ask the knowledgeable but pretty attendant to extract a misfired ream of sheets reading strength, dexterity, constitution, etc., well, that's just good Protestant work ethic. The very fact that I look forward each month to publicly committing my dirty laundry to podcast bespeaks a certain insoluble Untermensch dignity, albeit one steeped in the dissembled egotism of self-deprecation. So when my roommate bashfully confessed over brunch this past weekend that he would watch and enjoy any sitcom, regardless of its format, ingenuity, or overall quality, I was surprised to find myself at a loss for rejoinder. For several minutes, I struggled to distill my own viewing habits down to a similarly broad admission, some charming postmodern feather I could pin in my cap to signify our mutual embrace of our delightfully imperfect humanity. But for all my contortion, I nonetheless emerged from my own ass empty-handed. I could admit to the occasional lapse of taste, sure, I've once binged through all 8 episodes of Joe Schmo over a single Wednesday night, but nothing wide-reaching or categorical. On the whole, though it galled me to my core, my television viewing was that most terrible of things to a fashionably humble exhibitionist such as myself, discerning. The realization staggered me, and I left brunch weighed down not only by Horizon Cafe's signature Greek scramble, but by the looming specter of my own countercultural hypocrisy. Briefly, I considered Netflix as an antidote. Perhaps within the tomes of that vast depository I could divine some essential rubric for my own fallibility. Alas, even the ready banquet of meretricious pabulum provided by such new additions as Dog the Bounty Hunter and Street Sharks proved unappetizing. In the end, I resigned myself to my fate and swallowed the critically acclaimed Hemlock of Breaking Bad, season 3. And then, in the night, it came to me. My salvation. A heavenly principality given blood-stained form by Maggie Grace. In some half-remembered dream, she spoke to me, illuminating my weakness. Character death. Of course. That single defining feature that transcended genre to bind together so many of my indulgences, from Lost to Oz to Game of Thrones and beyond, pervading my apologetic love affairs of yore, encompassing every medium, King, Crichton, McDonough, from Titus Andronicus on down to The Quick and the Dead. Character death. I, Andrew Bentley, will sit through any amount of exposition, any number of dangling plots and hasty retcons, character inconsistencies, and mediocre acting, if there's a good chance, at some point, some or all of these people will die. There are requirements. We must be made to feel these people's deaths. We must know some, ideally too much, of their backstory. For this very reason, I'll never warm to slasher flicks. They provide too little time with the characters to make their departure meaningful. I can't be put upon to feel anything other than boredom when the two stoners in Alien vs. Predator 2 get decapitated 5 minutes after their introduction. But when a major character gets knifed to death by guest star Joel Grey halfway through season 6 of Oz, that's good television. Episodic TV plants these characters in our lives, waters and nurtures them, and I'll be damned if I don't really just want to see someone tear through the whole garden with a weed whacker. I've never even figured out what my ideal show would be. It wouldn't be a show, really, not in the traditional sense. Rather, it would be a production company that buys up the rights to other shows on what would be their final season, and then airs a sort of epilogue where the cast struggles valiantly, but futilely, against their inevitable mortality. Gladiatorial combat on site, Contavirus on Grey's Anatomy, Velociraptors on Saved by the Bell, I don't care. I would watch every single prior syndicated episode of Moesha just to add the necessary context to Niecy Jackson's bittersweet demise. I suppose some people might find my morbid epiphany a touch distasteful. Well, so is the Big Bang Theory, but I don't begrudge this audience their entertainment. Me? I'll keep an eye on those DVDs, just in case Sheldon accidentally breaches reality with a Hadron Collider and dooms humanity to extinction. Because that's just my guilty pleasure, with all the imperviousness our zeitgeist of anticritical irony provides. Different strokes, after all, and maybe the world don't move to the beat of just one drum, but I think everyone loves a sad trombone. Thank you.
I was gonna raise an objection since last time you talked about Firestorm dying in Identity Crisis, but I guess you didn't feel him as a character, is that right?
You
need to read more Firestorm,
that guy,
son.
It's like the flaming carrot clock.
That's insulting.
Yeah, so that's the question. Is he only here because he wants to see us die?